Hey guys, it's Emily, the controversial mom. And if you've not figured it out, I'm slightly different. I see the world through a very different lens. And one of the things that's a little different about me is I don't have celebrity crushes, I have political crushes. And for many years, my political crush has been on this guy named Ryan Walters. And if you don't know who Ryan Walters is, let me explain. He's the state superintendent in Oklahoma, and he is a staunch conservative. Very firm believer in the Bible, in Christ, and he really pushes his beliefs everywhere he goes. So he's made national headlines multiple times over the past couple of years for what he's really doing to clean up public schools in Oklahoma. And one of the headlines from earlier this year was about him pushing to get a Bible into every single public school in Oklahoma. So he's really open about his beliefs, and he pushes really hard for the things that he truly believes in. And you don't really see that a whole lot these days. So it definitely caught my attention and definitely made me admire him a lot because he's so public about his beliefs and what he's fighting for. But Mr. Walters has some competition these days because I have a new political crush on Marco Rubio. Now, I've heard of Marco Rubio for years, but I've never really thought much about him. In my opinion, he was kind of a weak-kneed Republican, and if anybody pushed back on him, he would cave. That's always been my opinion. But that's definitely changed over the past couple of weeks based on what I'm seeing with him. So, I've heard his name for years. I knew he was from Florida. I knew he had Cuban heritage and all of that. But I didn't quite understand the full scope of his history. So his parents migrated here from Cuba years ago, and they raised their family, obviously, in America. His dad was a bartender. His mom worked as a part-time motel maid and raised kids, took care of the family. So they're very traditional in their views, and they've worked really hard to make a living here in America, to live the American dream. And Marco saw that growing up. He knew exactly what it meant to legally migrate to a country and to work hard to achieve your goals. That's kind of his baseline, is watching his parents do that his entire life. So it put a natural place in his heart for him to serve others. So he really and truly got his start in politics by becoming a city commissioner in Florida. I think it was West or East Miami, I can't remember where it is. But he started out as a city commissioner. From there, he went on to become the Florida Speaker of the House. And then he eventually got to the point of being a U.S. Senator. And he served in the Senate from 2010 until 2025. So he was there for a really long time. During that time, he did take a little pause and he did attempt to run for president in 2016. But obviously, we know Trump won the nomination and Rubio backed out of that, that bid for president. So other than that, he's really spent most of his time as a U.S. Senator. And in 2025, he became the Secretary of State in Trump's second term. And I remember him being the first confirmed cabinet member under Trump's second term. I didn't think a whole lot about it. It just kind of seemed like a natural thing that, you know, no one really contests the Secretary of State. Like, that's easy peasy that they nominated him, confirmed him, not a big deal. What I didn't realize at the time was that it was actually a really historic vote because he was voted in, confirmed, unanimously. All 99 votes were in favor of Marco Rubio for Secretary of State. Not one single person voted against him. And when you compare that to what we saw with Pete Hegseth, with Tulsi Gabbard, with RFK, it's really very unique because all the other cabinet nominations had so much controversy. But Marco Rubio didn't have a single vote against him, which is really remarkable. Of course, I didn't understand any of that at the time, and I wasn't really paying attention because Marco Rubio just wasn't impressive to me at the time. But that has all changed because in the past couple of weeks, he has just been so strong, so bold in his convictions and his beliefs in the policies that he's pushing, that not only has he really and truly just gotten my attention, I have grown to admire him so much for what he's doing. So he became Secretary of State earlier this year. He then, shortly thereafter, took on a couple of additional roles. He has become the Director for Archives, which I didn't even know was a thing, but apparently it is, and he's doing it. He became National Security Advisor to Trump, which I do remember headlines on that, but again, I didn't pay a whole lot of attention. But he also became the director for USAID. Now, we all remember USAID when Elon went in and he started doing all the Doge things and he cut all the DEI contracts. They gutted the entire USAID. They got rid of all the staff. They got rid of leadership, all the things. They then moved the director role to Marco Rubio. Now, I assumed it was a temporary thing that he was kind of the acting director because that's just what we typically see, but apparently not. Apparently, that was very intentional and a long-term fix, at least in Trump's mind. So, Marco Rubio assumes this role over USAID. And when he took over that, they continued going through and doing a lot of cleanup with the Doge. So, since Marco Rubio has taken over that, they have cut 83% of programs in the USAID. 83%. That is insane. They have cut somewhere between 5,000 to 6,000 different contracts. I mean, we're talking billions of dollars that they have cut in spending under Marco Rubio managing the USAID. It's insane what they have done. Now, the USAID, I again have not followed this very closely over the years, so I've learned a lot with it. But Marco Rubio actually advocated that USAID come up under the Secretary of State because they both deal with foreign policy. Now, the interesting thing in all of it is that this is not the first administration that's actually suggested that USAID fall up under your Secretary of State. It's just the first administration that figured out how to do it. This actually started, I'm not kidding you, 20 years ago when Condoleezza Rice was the Secretary of State. She is actually the first person that advocated for this in 2005. It took till 2025 to make this happen. And not because Congress finally got on board or lobbyists got involved. It came down to one simple thing. Marco Rubio advocated for it and Trump got it done in the course of a couple of months. So what our government couldn't figure out how to do in 20 years, Marco Rubio and Trump fixed in a couple of months. Let that sink in. So Marco Rubio has been doing amazing things with USAID. He's been cutting tons of waste. So something big happened in the past couple of weeks. He actually had his first hearing on the Hill, and I can't really figure out if it was a Senate hearing, a House hearing, maybe it was both, I don't know. He was in front of a lot of people answering a lot of questions. And the video clips have been insane to watch. I have absolutely loved it. I've watched them on repeat. They're amazing. But basically what happened is Rubio has to go to these hearings and he's more or less defending the budget for the Secretary of State / USAID. So in one of the hearings, he has to start defending all of the actions he's taken under the USAID and all the cuts specifically that he's made. And he goes on record for saying that we're not going to continue funding all of these outrageous projects and contracts all across the country if they don't align with our national policy and what's in the best interest of the United States. Now, I know that seems pretty logical, but apparently it took Marco Rubio having to state this before anybody actually figured it out. So he kind of gives some examples that we've seen with the Doge cuts that we're no longer going to fund, you know, the gay Sesame Streets in Afghanistan because that doesn't align with the best interest of our country. So he kind of goes through the examples of things that we've cut, and he goes on to say, we're still the most generous country in the world. We're still going to continue to support food assistance, economic assistance, developmental assistance. We're still going to do all those things, but only in the places where it makes sense because it's in the best interest of the United States. So, for instance, we're not going to give billions of dollars to Africa when South Africa is pushing genocidal tendencies on white Christians. And he goes through the entire example of what's happening with the crosses on the side of the road and how we're now having to provide refugee assistance to these people because they're white and they're Christian, they're being murdered in their country, they need a way out. So if that's the philosophy of that country, that's not going to align with the principles of the United States. Therefore, they're not getting aid from the USAID. This is common sense stuff, but Rubio's the first person to actually state this publicly, and it's quite phenomenal. So then he goes on to another hearing, and he is questioned about the restructuring of the State Department, Secretary of State organization. And this congressman, like, basically berates him for changing the structure to work with his new policies and says, you can't just unilaterally do that. You've got to come to Congress to do it. And Rubio pushes back really well and just says, the way we've done business for the past 20 to 30 years doesn't work in today's environment. You want an archaic approach to communication, and that doesn't work in the field. So he talks about the process that he goes through, or that communication goes through to get to him. And he's talking about how someone writes a memo and it has to go through all of these steps and past all of these hands before the final product actually gets to his desk. And at that point, months have passed, the intel is wrong, the situation's evolved, so he can't make informed decisions. So he pushes back on this congressman to just say, your way's broken. We're not doing it that way anymore. We're going to do it my way, which is to allow the people, the boots on the ground, to communicate with me more directly. I want intel directly from the embassies and the bureaus in the regions telling me what's happening and what needs to be done so that we can make quicker, more informed decisions that align with the policies of the United States. So he shuts that one down really quick, and it was amazing to watch. But those are still not my favorite ones. My favorite two examples that have came out of the last couple of hearings this week or last week was this lady out of Washington. And I don't even know this woman's name. I've never heard of her. But she starts to berate Marco Rubio because he has revoked student visas. And she's referring to this very specific, like, one person that had their student visa revoked because, as she claims, the student wrote an op-ed that was anti-Trump and anti the Trump administration. So she keeps claiming that Marco Rubio revoked this one person's student visa because of an op-ed that he disagreed with. And Marco Rubio was just on fire. Like, this is truly the turning point for me with him. He completely ignores everything she says. He just says, everything you said is a lie. None of that's true, except for the fact that I did revoke student visas, and I'll do it again, and I'll do it again, and I'll do it again. Because when people file a student visa, they're saying they want to come here and learn. It is a privilege to have a student visa to our country. It is not a right, and I will take that privilege away if I so choose, and I'll do it 1,000 times if I want to. We're not going to allow people to come into our country, lie about why they're coming, turn in to social justice warriors, go take over campuses, destroy property of the universities, and fight for causes that are against the policies of the United States. It was amazing. Literally, like, he torched this woman because of the lies that she was saying. And he used it as an opportunity to just put her in her place and say, yeah, I revoked the student visas, and I'll do it 1,000 times more. And if y'all want to complain about it, pound sand. I don't care. We're going to do what's right for our country. Completely unapologetic, completely bold in his stance. He was not backing off 1 second. He made a decision, and he stood by it. And it was amazing to watch him push back on this lady. But then the best one of all was the guy out of Maryland. So if y'all remember, it's really not been that long ago, the whole Maryland dad issue where this gang member got deported and the left claimed that it was a mistake. He shouldn't have been. It was all nonsense. The guy was an MS-13 gang member. He got deported because he should have been deported. But there was a senator out of Maryland, Van Hollen, I think is his name. If you remember, he's the guy that went down to El Salvador to meet with this gang member and pretend to care and protect him and all the things. He made a huge media spectacle out of the whole thing. So this guy starts grilling Marco Rubio during the hearings in the past week or so. And he says to Marco Rubio, I regret voting for you. You're not the Marco Rubio that I thought you were. You're not the Senator Rubio that we saw for years. This version you've turned into is not what I voted for, and I want to personally tell you, I regret voting for you. And without missing a beat, Marco Rubio leans forward to the mic and says, well, Senator Van Hollen, If you regret voting for me, then that means I'm doing everything right and that I'm doing my job. Because while you're defending the guy that we deported and having margaritas with the guy, I'm working to continue to deport every gang member in this country because that's in the best interest of our country and our citizens. And I'll keep doing it because that's what we need to do. It was amazing. Like, the guy does not care that people are coming after him. He does not care that people are mad. He is doing what is right and what is in the best interest of our country. And I never thought that Marco Rubio would be the guy to do it. I've always thought he was a squishy Republican that just really and truly wouldn't stand firm. But that's not who he is. He is an amazing leader fighting so hard for our country, and it's so exciting. Like, I love it. So all the memes that are going up around 2028 being a Vance Rubio ticket that I first dismissed, I am all for it right now. Like, if this is who Marco Rubio is, by all means, a Vance Rubio ticket in 2028 would be phenomenal. We probably would make liberal heads explode, but that's kind of a win, I think, in the end. So I am all for this Vance Rubio ticket right now. So Marco Rubio, you have become my new political crush. I'm going to do everything I can to figure out how to get him here in Huntsville in the next year because I just think he's amazing and I think more people need to hear him and understand who he is. So keep your eyes open, people. I'm hoping to bring you here because we need more Marco Rubios in our state and definitely in our country. So that is why Marco Rubio is now my number one political crush, and I will continue to track him for years and months to come because I'm just admiring him so much for all that he is doing. So thanks for coming, guys. As always, I will see you next week.